episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt join me. I hope everybody enjoyed a wonderful weekend of Road America. I know I did. Jess and Matt, how's everybody doing tonight?
Great.
Not too bad.
Fantastic. Let's get started.
All right, guys. So we are going to start tonight by recapping Road America. The top five for the race are Rossi, clearly. I think everybody knows that one by now. Power, Newgarden, Rahal, and Dixon. So what'd you guys think about the race?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't know, obviously, how it played out on TV with some of the battles going on course. But I know our friends down in turn five, you know, shout out to David Lighting and Sawyer Sparks and whoever else was over that way. But I know everybody had a blast and I really enjoyed it.
I hated it. And the reason I hated it is because I was sitting at home and watching it instead of being at the track, because I missed it so much. It looks so good on TV, and seeing all the fans there and how nice the weather held out for the race on Sunday and just how much fun everybody was having on social media and all the track action that we saw, I was so sad that I missed it. But that is why we love Road America, because the crowds are great, the food's great, the fans are great, the atmosphere's great, and then the racing this year was spectacular. I thought a really good step in the right direction from last year for whatever reason. But overall, yeah, really sad to miss it because it was such an excellent race.
I'm definitely going to agree with that. I'm actually going to say that for this season so far, this is my favorite race of the year. I was blown away with how good it was. Obviously, you know, Rossi ran away with it, but the rest of the field was such good racing, and I had so much fun watching it on TV.
I thought, if I can jump in, I thought it was probably the best race of the year too as well. For me, I think coming into the race is either COTA or the Indy 500, and this is definitely, to me, the best race so far this year. I don't know if Mike thought the same.
Yeah, no, it was definitely, man, I don't know if it beats the 500 for me, but it's definitely top two of the year, let's say. There was plenty of action throughout the entire field from start to finish. And, you know, there was battles all over the place, people bumping wheels, you know, crazy passes going on, some good strategy battle going on through the field. And, you know, thankfully the rain held out until right when we walked into the media center for the press conference post-race. So, you know, the weather held out exactly like the weather people predicted it. Just kidding on that one.
Joe, they've had a bad year, though, the meteorologists of the IndyCar world. I don't know why, but rain did held off just in time. If there was a caution, I think the end of the race would have been really interesting, but that's just a bunch of ifs and justs. But one of the great things about the race, in my opinion, was the epic drive we saw from Scott Dixon to get spun in turn five. And I don't pin that so much in Ryan Hunter Ray as far as the incident itself, and there was no penalties given, I think, correctly so. To go to the back of the field and a good distance back, I think it was like 8 seconds back of the next guy, to rally and finish fifth when there was not a single caution in the race where he got like a lucky yellow or strategy or anything like that. He just straight up brute forced his way through the field and got up to the top five somehow. Where does that rank amongst, you know, Scott Dixon's best drives in recent memory or his career? I mean, to me, it's up there. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, the one thing I want to say is I think it's even better than his drive in Portland last year when he somehow escaped that accident. In terms of last year in Portland, he kind of played it safe, you know, had to worry about the points. This year, he was running and gunning the entire time. It's just, I mean, it was insanely impressive to see. You know, he went from 23rd and finished fifth, so he passed, you know, 18 cars, probably most of them on track, since there wasn't a lot of you know, pit changes because of the lack of caution. So, man, it's one of, if not his best drive in the last couple of years, that's for sure.
I definitely think it was good. I'd say if he would have ended up, you know, mid-pack or something, I wouldn't have said it was one of his best drives, because no offense to the guys who finished in the bottom half, but there was a whole lot of struggling going on with some of the guys. So I wouldn't have been nearly as impressed, but to come out in, what was it, fifth place was just, it was impressive. And I'm not the biggest Scott Dixon fan. Don't get me wrong. I think he's very, very talented, but this just puts it into perspective just how good he can be when he needs to be.
Yeah, I think top five drive of his career for sure. One of the best, the one at Road America, though, a couple years ago, where he ended up beating out the Penske juggernaut, who seemed like they had it on lockdown that weekend. I don't know how he won that race, but that's, I think, up there as well. And then, as Mike said, Portland last year too. So, yeah, what can we say about the GOAT other than that he did GOAT things on Sunday? And I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but it was still kind of surprising to see how good he did.
Was that the race you're talking about at Mid-Ohio where he started last and ended up winning?
No, the Road America one, I think it was 2016. Somehow beat Newgarden and Castro Neves, who had the field on lockdown that weekend. That Mid-Ohio one, though, was another one. How do you start last in Mid-Ohio and win? Has anybody ever done that?
Scott Dixon.
I was gonna say that, but
it's just like tracks like that, Mid-Ohio, Laguna Seca, the Road America. You don't start last and win. So for him to do that too, I mean, that's just unheard of.
Yeah, very well said. Speaking of Road America, there was a piece of debris off the line in turn seven, which during the race, many people thought it was concrete. Robin Miller said it wasn't concrete. I believe the word in the media center from our buddy Jim Aiello was that it was a piece of the curbing on the turn there. What do you guys think about race control not throwing a caution?
I thought they made the right call. It seemed from, you know, the brief time we saw it on TV that it was out of the racing line. And I mean... Yeah, it's debris, and yeah, at first I was a little like, yeah, they should probably get that, but then after seeing it again, I felt like it wasn't really in an area where there was much chance of it getting hit, so I thought they made the right call, even though I know I'm pretty much in the minority on this one.
No, I'll stand with you on that one, too. I think, to me, I would trust what the drivers were saying. And what a lot of the feedback that race control was getting was that the drivers are saying it wasn't in the racing line. So, you know, please let the race go on. And yeah, I would rather err on the side of safety. However, if nobody is yammering for it and it appears to be in a situation where it's not going to endanger any of the drivers, especially with that turn, it's a flat out kink. It's not too difficult for the drivers to stay on the racing line. And thus I don't believe it was ever touched by any of the drivers. So, to me, I agree that I think it was a good idea for race control not to throw a caution.
Yeah, I'm going to agree there. I'm trying to gather my thoughts here. I get why the social media uproar happened, but at the same time, if it wasn't on the racing line, that has been race control's MO, all year now, and even last year since Kyle Novak took over. And like Matt said, I'm going to take the word of the drivers here. And when Alex Rossi, Will Power, and Joseph Newgarden, who aren't just some ho-hum drivers, all say it was of no concern to us because it was offline, I'm just going to take their word for that because they're much smarter people than I am.
And I think even Joseph after the race kind of just shrugged it off and was like, yeah, it wasn't really a big deal when he was asked about it in the media center. So for him to say that... I trust that. And speaking of Joseph, something we haven't done a lot in the last couple shows is we always give our predictions before the race, and then we never come back and throw shade upon ourselves if we're wrong. So we're going to recap our predictions before the race for Road America here real quick. I had Joseph Newgarden, who finished third. Jess had Graham Rahal, who finished fourth. And Mike had Rossi, who obviously dominated the race. So actually a pretty good... job on our part in the prediction area for the guys who would do good. For the ones who would do poorly, Let's see. Mike said Ganassi, and I think, let's see.
I got that one wrong.
Yeah, Dixon finished fifth, and Rosenquist finished sixth, I believe, or somewhere in that area.
Yes, it was sixth.
That is a boo moment for Mike. Jess had Hunter Ray. I think Hunter Ray finished, what, 10th or 11th? 11th. So that's a bit of a struggle. I'll give him that. That's not where we expect Hunter Ray to be. So I don't know if that qualifies as a struggle.
I'll give myself like a C for that one.
But how about Ed Jones? What do we think? Ed Jones finished...
Yep, struggle best.
22nd out of 23rd, only to Marco Andretti's mechanical failure. I don't know. That might be becoming low-hanging fruit at this point if I pick Ed Jones for a road course race to struggle. I don't know if you guys agree with that.
Not yet. But it's getting close.
It's like right there on the verge. I won't say you picked low hanging fruit this time, but if you pick him for, you know, next week, then yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll see what I can do about that.
That was your last choice.
I guess next time I'll pick Max Chilton. Is that fair?
Okay. All right, so now that we've recapped that, and we all know that we did pretty good on our picks for the do well, who do you guys pick as your driver of the day?
So I'm going to go somebody not obvious here since I jumped first. I'm going to leave the high-hanging fruit for somebody else. I'm going to go with Felix Rosenquist. He really didn't have a good Friday or Saturday. Qualified 18th and just really steadily progressed throughout the race to finish sixth. Didn't make any wrong moves, had a couple nice passes, and that was exactly the type of race Felix needed, not necessarily to silence the social media crowd, but just to get a little bit of confidence as the second half of the season started.
Yeah, because I think if us three unanimously had to agree, I think it'd obviously be Rossi. So to kind of stray away from that and pick somebody kind of outside the box, to kind of go along with the same logic that Mike's going with, I thought James Hinchcliffe had a pretty good day. And on top of that, it's just a result he's been needing, kind of along the same lines as Rosenquist with this unnecessary foolishness that he's going to get fired or whatever. But with Hinch, it's just not been a good year for him. Could have easily finished fifth had those last couple of laps gone his way, but even to finish seventh and to show really good pace all weekend, I think was a really good result for him springboarding into his home race. So hopefully he can capture a good result there as well.
So I'm actually very shocked that neither of you picked him, considering we just talked about it was possibly one of the best drives of his career. Scott Dixon, obviously it was fantastic to watch him work. I would say Rossi, but I told, one of my friends this the other day when we were talking, I said, that was just art what Rossi did. He, everything came together and it was perfect, but I feel like Scott Dixon's was actually better because he had to work harder for it. So I'm going to say Dixon. And with that, we are going to jump into our first fan question of the evening. And this one's going to come from our Patreon member, not the author, Stephen King. He wants to know, now that we, the three of us, are credentialed media members, has that changed our IndyCar experience? And has it changed any aspects of us being fans?
To me, it has not changed my experience as a fan. You know, after Detroit, which was my first taste of the media center experience and being a media member, I still went home for the next race and was giddy as a 4-year-old watching on TV. And I still had so much fun just enjoying all the little things about Detroit and all the other races I get to watch. And to me, it hasn't changed my fandom for IndyCar. And the only thing it's done as far as just being behind the scenes is made me appreciate just how much work goes into an IndyCar weekend and how many people make it as successful as it is, you know, all of the IndyCar staff and all of the media people and whatnot, I think they all do a terrific job and really help the train keep going forward. So I don't know. It made me respect a lot of the people within the sport, and then it has not changed me as a fan at all.
Yeah, similar to Matt, I don't think it's changed my, you know, anything about being a fan. If anything, I watch the race, or, you know, current races more and old races even more, to, you know, keep my knowledge up to date because I have a short-term memory. But in terms of the first question, I think Matt hit the nail on the head there. It's really made me, you know, appreciate. I've learned a ton, you know, being there weekend after weekend from, you know, sitting behind our buddy Marshall Pruitt all of May. Hope his wife is doing well, by the way. But just, you know, just being there, it has taught me a lot about what it takes to succeed on, you know, week after week, and all the hard work that they put in. And I think, you know, that's upped my game this year, or at least I hope it has. It's made me appreciate everything that I didn't know before, how hard the teams work, how hard the drivers work, you know, just a little bit of everything.
Okay, well, I'm going to go slightly different here. Yes, it has changed some aspects of being a fan for me. It's made me more well-rounded as a fan, I guess, because now I don't just watch the couple people I'm rooting for. I watch everything that's happening. I watch everybody. You know, obviously you all know that I'm not a giant fan of Marco, but I still watch what's going on with him. I pay attention to what's happening. What's he doing to change things, things like that. Whereas previously I would have ignored him like he wasn't even there. So I think that it's made me a little more aware of absolutely everything that's going on as far as being a fan. And as far as my experience, I would say for sure it has taught me just how much time and effort everybody puts in, including us, which, you know, the normal fan wouldn't necessarily see because they show up for the race or qualifying in the race and they don't see all of the back stuff that goes into it. So it's definitely made me appreciate the, for lack of a better term, the traveling circus that IndyCar is.
Yeah, that's certainly for sure. All right, I am going to jump into some Patreon shout outs before we move on here. Thank you to Michelle, Mr. Mike Knapp, Mike Silver, Sean Crawford, Stephen A. Clark, the aforementioned Stephen King, Mr. Steve Baker, Jess's dad, and Matt's brother-in-law, Tyrone. And thank you to everybody who continues to listen week in and week out. And back to fan questions. This one from David Lighting, who you can find on Twitter at DLight_47. This one's directed to me. This is exciting. What did you think of Road America? How did it compare to other venues? And how was the food? First off, shout out to David and his wife, Michelle, for the food on Friday at the campsite and the company on Sunday when I was the last one pretty much left at the track when there was nothing much going on, and the drinks. And we ran into Aaron Tielitz there, who's even nicer in person than he was on our episode last year. What did I think of Road America? It's beautiful. Now, admittedly, I didn't get to walk the entire 4 mile circuit, but it was really nice. It's almost like a step up to how nice I think Barber is, because there's just so much going on all around the track, whereas Barber is, it's kind of confined to one or two areas of where everything, you know, what there is to do everywhere. But all in all, it's a beautiful facility. There's, you know, plenty of places to go, you know, eat and grab some food afterwards outside the track. But the food at the track was fantastic. I ate a lot of food that probably didn't help my diet this weekend. But yeah, it was great. The Spotted Cow beer, this was my first time having this, you know, beer that I've heard talked about. consistently every time Road America comes up. Did not disappoint. Is there anything else I'm missing here?
You have the cheese curds?
I had cheese curds at the airport and they were fantastic. I did not have them at the track. I couldn't fit it into all the food I had. And special shout out to Graham Rahal for making fun of Jim Aiello and I for talking too much about food during the live show on Friday. I happen to like talking about food, Graham. So anyway.
What do you say?
He said we should find other stuff to talk about in a kidding way.
That's funny.
Probably just made him hungry. And I don't think you can eat a couple brats before you go into a race car.
Yeah, I don't know. Jess, is there kind of get us a little talking about this. Is there a venue to you that's just excelled in all areas of your fan experience, food, atmosphere, just quality of facility? Anything stand out to you?
Oh, man. So when we take food away from it, I'm going to say St. Pete. The atmosphere there is just fantastic.
And they have arepas.
I wasn't a giant fan of those, remember?
Oh, you weren't?
No, I wasn't. Anyways, no, but I think that is a fantastic facility. And like I said, I think that the crowd is just so pumped up and so ready to get the season started. And it's so much fun. And this year the crowd was so big. And we did that 5K, which Mike, it was shockingly a good time, even though we complained the entire time. It was fun to walk around the track and make fun of the marbles and such. So yeah, I'm going to say I like St. Pete really well.
I'm actually going to put you on the spot. Cause you said that take away the food and it's up there. What food do you dream that they bring other than a 400-pound block of cheese? What food do you wish they would bring?
Oh, that's such a hard question. Cause I'm on a diet. Why would you do that?
You can always just say Pizza Hut.
Oh, right. Except I would have to wait in line for like 12 days. So, no, probably not Pizza Hut. I don't know. I really enjoy the food that they have. This is totally not IndyCar related, but that they have for the U.S. Nationals here in Indianapolis in September. It's like, you know, food truck type food, but they always seem to have really good food. So I would say let's take all of the food trucks from the U.S. Nationals to St. Pete.
I'm sorry if you're hungry and listening to the show right now, because we're really probably not helping too much. And if you're just suddenly finding the urge to go to a food truck between lunch or dinner or whatever, just go do it. You're not going to be disappointed in yourself, I don't think. But yeah, enough food, because now I'm hungry as well. We got another fan question here. This one's from our good friend Michael Goodyear, who's at mgoodyear 007. This one's another Road America kind of question. On the back of, you know, what Mike said about how amazing the facility is and the food, which I can definitely attest to, another good thing about Road America is that everybody has access to the paddock. And so what Michael wanted to know is that, do we like Road America's policy on general admission tickets that can also get you into the paddock? And should other tracks follow their lead?
This is a double-edged sword. I like it, but at the same time, it can be a little hectic and a little overwhelming because, you know, with that many people, it's hard to get around, and it's just a giant crowd. So I think that it is a double-edged sword. I think it's really good to an extent, but I also think that the paddock area has to have enough space to allow it. I think it's great for fan access as far as, you know, keeping costs down goes, because I know not everybody can necessarily afford to buy a paddock pass at every race. But they have to be careful and make sure that it doesn't get too crowded.
Yeah, it's definitely a double-edged sword. I think I think it would make a lot of sense on an oval like Pocono or Iowa, you know, the non-Indy ovals, it might get, you know, a couple more people in there. And, you know, obviously attendance at ovals is always the hotly debated topic nowadays. At a place like Road America, it does get a little tough because the paddock is, you know, pretty wide open, but the, you know, the area closer to the pits is pretty narrow and confined. So, especially Saturday, it was a little crazy to walk through there. But I think tracks, if they do this maybe on a Friday sort of thing and keep it to that, but ovals, you know, keep it open all weekend. That's my idea without, you know, putting a lot of logical thought into this.
Yeah, I like that idea. Just like the first day, just make it open to everybody. And then from there, it honestly would depend on the circuit, you know, Indianapolis 500, Long Beach, St. Pete, some of the more well-attended tracks, it would be really tough. I think David was saying that Sunday at Road America was pretty rough. But other tracks, like you said, Iowa, Pocono, Detroit, some of the not necessarily less attended races, but the ones that just don't have as big capacities, I think would be, you know, no problem to accommodate the needs to just have the paddock open all weekend. So, which doesn't make sense to me because Iowa, it's like $40 to get down there. To me, is kind of ridiculous, but they should be encouraging the fans to get down there and just walk the paddock. So, yeah, I see it both ways. If I had to kind of decide, I'd just say leave it up to the tracks, but try to encourage some of the lesser attended races to kind of look at just opening it up for everybody.
Yeah, very well said. Before we get to our next topic here, I'm going to throw in a stump the hosts. Now, since Toronto is next, I'm going to ask this one Toronto-related question here. This year's Toronto race is on July 14th. The race has fallen on July 14th twice in its history, dating back to 1986. Can anybody give me the year or the winner? And just to help you guys out a little bit, one is somewhat recent. One is about 20-something years ago.
Lord.
If you could see the look on my face, you would know that the answer is just no.
Is it?
Yeah. I think the answer is going to be a big old no for me. That's
Here, I've got a soundboard clip with what I think you guys might say right now.
What?
Kind of. Yeah, that was my first one. I don't even know. Like, there's some people out there who know every date in which the Indianapolis 500 was on, and I don't even know that.
I think this might be the first time in the history of Stump the Host that nobody has been able to come up with one of the answers.
Well, I could just roll through the list of winners, but that would be boring for everybody at home.
Right. Okay. So in the interest of time, July 14th, 1996, Adrian Fernandez won with Tasman Motorsports. And then as part of the doubleheader year that he swept Toronto, Scott Dixon won in 2013.
Well, already.
There you go.
Educational lesson for everybody. And if I see you at the track in Toronto, I expect you to remember the answer.
And that'll be 23 years since the passing of Jeff Krasnov. So,
oh, wow.
I guess thoughts and, you know, everything with his family as far as remembering him, because that day in 96 was pretty sad.
Yeah, I always forget about the fact that that was in 1996. Moving on, happier notes. Jim Aiello was talking to, I believe, Will Power over the weekend. And Will Power, in Jim Aiello's article, stated, "I think the push-to-pass system is wrong. Either give us a lot less so you don't have to reply every time, or you have a no-reply system." So just so what he's referring to, everybody out there, is if you are the lead car, you cannot use push to pass. But if you are the car trying to make a pass, you can. What do you guys think?
I personally think he's flat out wrong. And what he's describing is DRS, which is the worst thing ever, which is what Formula One does, in which you can't react to the driver behind you using DRS. So basically, you just are sitting duck on a straightaway and have no chance. And I know he said that before the race, because I think, you know, maybe his opinion is a little different after what we saw during the race, because that race was phenomenal at Road America. I would be really against if they went to a no reply system. I know they do it in Indy Lights, but I just don't think it's meant for IndyCar, especially if they go towards the direction of adding more horsepower. If they lessened it, I don't think I would be against that per se, but I also don't think there's anything wrong with the current system as long as, you know, the tires and the downforce levels and whatnot are conducive to the racing that we saw at Road America, because some tracks are a little stale, but I completely disagree with what he said.
Yeah, I am not a fan of his idea either. I mean, giving them less time, fine, I guess, but they don't get that much time anyways. I think that he wants the no reply system because, you know, then it's beneficial to whoever wants to use their time. Well, great, but, you know, right now it's more of a cat and mouse game, whereas that would make it like, I don't know. I frankly think it would be more boring than the current system. I don't think the current system is boring, but it's just, I don't know. I just disagree also.
Yeah, I think the one nice thing about the current push-to-pass system is you have to manage it. You know, yes, you are able to respond, but if you respond and you've only got 12 seconds left and the other guy's got 60 seconds left, you're going to be in trouble anyway. So it really teaches you to use it wisely. So I also agree that it should stay the way it is. Obviously, if they, you know, like Matt said, increase horsepower or, you know, something changes, then maybe it's tweaked a little bit or they lessen the total push to pass. But right now, I don't think it needs to be changed.
Okay, so we are all in agreement that willpower is silly. So on that note, we're going to move on to the silly season.
Ooh, nice segue.
Ah, you like it? Couldn't help it. It was just right there. Anyways, so as we all know, Rossi is going to be up for a new contract, and pretty much everybody is talking about him, looking at him, wanting him. Everybody kind of knows he's, I guess, the biggest story. I'll say his biggest pursuers right now are probably Team Penske, but Cindric says four cars is going to be hard. Penske hasn't said anything, and then Newgarden and Power both are kind of like, yeah, whatever, as long as he's not taking my spot, which I totally get. I can see their point 100%. And then we have Robin Miller at Racer Magazine is stating that Andretti is contemplating actually switching to Chevy for next year. So that could be an interesting kind of twist for everything. And then along these lines, you know, for kind of all of that, if Andretti does leave to go to Chevy, where would Rossi end up? And if he goes to Arrow, who would Arrow drop? And this is a fan question from DJ Jordan.
Wow. So, man, yes. I didn't know Rossi was a free agent.
I don't think he is.
Right.
I think his contract is expiring next season, from what I read. But for some reason, it's like a big question at this moment.
Anyway, if you get a chance to read the transcript of the press conference after the race, yesterday, it was pretty funny. And I love Newgarden Power going, listen, we don't care as long as we still have jobs. Just like the three of us, if we get a new coworker, we don't really care as long as it's not replacing us either. It's tough for me to see Penske adding four full-time cars, but then again, they did it for a while, so I don't want to count that one out yet. My gut says he stays with Andretti, as I've kind of said all along. It just doesn't make sense for him to go anywhere else. He's really the head honcho in terms of drivers at Andretti right now, at least in terms of, you know, championship caliber. And then the racer and Andretti switching to Chevrolet report is very intriguing. And this has been kind of floating around the paddock for months now, and I'm glad somebody has finally brought it up so we can talk about it. I don't know why they would. I don't know why Honda would, you know, want them to. If I were Honda, I'd be saying, listen, we want to keep Rossi and we want to keep Andretti. You know, we'll pony up the money. But DJ, if I have to answer your question, also, it was good to see you this weekend. Where would Rossi end up? Man, I'm going to take a shot in the dark here. And if Andretti goes to Chevy, I think Rossi does go to Aero. And unfortunately, that probably means Marcus Ericsson is out of a ride.
Yeah. DJ, it was nice seeing you in Detroit. Always a good time. Always great to cross paths with you. Yeah, like Mike said, with the rumblings of Andretti switching to Chevy, when I was told that, you know, a couple months ago, you know, I think my first response in the group text was like, no, that's not going to happen. And, or, you know, why is Michael Andretti doing that? Because he's done this before. He started with Chevy, then switched to Honda. Then I believe he switched. I don't know if they ever switched back to Chevy, actually. But they're one of the few teams that's switched engine manufacturers since 2012, you know, after starting with one. And I don't get their angle on that one. Not only do you jeopardize losing Rossi, but I think, as Jess said in our text messages, is that Chevy is not willing to usually pony up money to help fulfill a ride. In the case where Honda has done it with Rossi, they do it with Sato. I think they have a couple other drivers they like to support as well. Hinch, I think. So to me, I don't know why you would switch, especially since it's not like, doesn't look like Honda's letting you down at all. Honda teams are strong. Chevrolet teams are pretty good, but it's mostly Team Penske. So I don't know. I don't see why they would switch. So if for some reason they do, which I would disagree with, I don't know. It's got to be Aero. I don't see him going to Ganassi's a third car there. Not usually the most successful of teams as a whole. He's usually Dixon and then kind of a average second car. So, and then if it was Aero SPM, I don't know. I think Hinch would be in trouble, if I'm being honest. I think Ericsson would get another chance, and I don't know if he's bringing funding as well, but I would think that Hinch might need to start sweating a little.
I'm going to be that person here. I know that Honda has supported Rossi for a long time. They love him, and he has loved them. But the thing is that as well as he is doing, he is not going to need to worry about the money situation. So I don't think that any team being a Chevy team automatically is going to turn him off. As far as him wanting to go there. Could I see him at Penske? Yes. Do I see them getting rid of any of their current drivers? No. So I think it would have to be a four-car team. And obviously, if Cindric says it's difficult, it's got to be difficult. So I think that that's something they're all going to take into account before they make any crazy decisions. As far as if Andretti is going to switch to Chevy, I mean, honestly, it wouldn't shock me. This has been a rumor for a while, and we all know that rumors get started when things are kind of happening, when people see other people together or whatever, however it went down. I don't know. I honestly didn't even read the whole thing from Robin Miller. I got the gist of it, but I didn't read it all. But it wouldn't shock me, because like you said, Michael's done it before, so what's to keep him from doing it again? If they do switch to Chevy, like I said, I don't necessarily see that being the thing that makes Rossi jump ship. I don't particularly see him going to Aero. But I guess if he did go to Aero, I would say that Hinch should probably be a little bit worried, because he's not having a very promising year. I can't really see them making that a full-time three car team, but maybe. It would be real interesting, but yeah, I would say in this case, probably Hinch would need to be more worried, because at least Erickson is a rookie. So he's just getting through his, little bumps and bruises of being a rookie, but Hinch has got the experience, and unfortunately he's had a less than stellar season so far.
Ooh, can I keep the hypothetical train going?
Yeah, do it.
All right. So hypothetically, if Andretti switched to Chevy, that means that Chevy would have Penske, Andretti, Ed Carpenter, Carlin, Foyt, and then, you know, some of the part-time teams like Dreyer and Reinbold when they show up in places in Juncos. And is Dragon Speed Chevy? So hypothetically, if Andretti switched, do you see any of the Chevy teams upping and going to Honda, either of you two?
I feel like somebody would almost have to.
Yeah.
Because I don't, as good as Chevy is, I just don't feel like they could easily provide enough engines for that many cars on a regular basis. Because, you know, sometimes things happen and you'll lose an engine, and unfortunately, it does happen, so they have to be prepared. And I think that would be stretching it a little bit, honestly.
Maybe Dale Coyne?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
No, wait, Dale Coyne's Honda already.
Right, but isn't he going to switch to... Oh, I'm sorry.
You did that backwards. I'm thinking like a Foyt, because what is... yeah. I mean, I don't know if Foyt's all about the Hondas. I mean, they used to do Honda with Sato and all that, and then they switched to Chevy, and it's been kind of miserable for them.
Yeah, I mean...
Can't hurt to try, right?
I was going to say, and they have said that they want to start from the ground up, so it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing for them, I don't think.
Yeah, and nothing hurts.
All right, well, now that we've just totally revamped the entire paddock for next season, let's move on to another fan question. This one is from @LoneWolfGAM. Well, this is kind of, we kind of just did this one, but do we have any bold predictions for the remainder of the IndyCar season?
Oh, that's rough. I'm trying to look, because I think there's going to be a surprise winner in the final couple races here. I'm just trying to determine who, and not who with a question mark that Jess would normally do, but just a who. And I don't know. I don't want to go off the back of what Jess said last year, but can I do like an early Spencer Pigot's going to win a race and maybe at Iowa? But he also had, they had a test this week at Mid-Ohio, and he was fast. I think he led the second session, and that's including Joseph Newgarden and Will Power in that session. And, you know, we can say sandbagging and all that good stuff about Penske, because they don't usually flex their muscles too much in testing, but he looked pretty good at Mid-Ohio, and he looked really good at Iowa last year. So my bold prediction is we might see a win out of Pigot this year.
I'm going to go that a Carlin car is going to finish in the top five in one of the remaining races.
Oof.
All right. Do you know which car?
Just one of them.
One of them. Either the 59 or the 31.
Okay, well, either way, that is super bold. Both of those are pretty bold. I would say Spencer winning is way less bold than Carlin finishing in the top five. I am going to say that Scott Dixon is going to struggle for the rest of the season. I just feel like he's had a rough one. Nothing's kind of gone his way. And, you know, a couple accidents. One of them being totally his fault. I just don't see him being able to totally turn his luck around and shake it all off. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's going to like crash out of every race or anything crazy like that, but I just don't think he's going to going to be able to turn his season around. I think he's going to be kind of struggling for the rest of the season. I don't think he's going to have a good one.
Yeah, we might have to make that our poll of the week, because that's three really bold predictions, in my opinion. So we'll have to see if we can get a
down to
get some input on that from the fans on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at Pit Lane Parlay. It's P-A-R-L-E-Y. Love to hear you guys chime in.
All right. Well, it's time for everybody's favorite segment. I think we need a soundboard, kind of like fun clip before we get into the pitfalls here. But it is time for the pitfalls, and thanks to our pals at the lovely named Eargasm Earplugs for their continued support. And go to their website, which you can find in our show notes on whatever podcast app you're using. Matt, why don't you go ahead and start us off for the pitfalls?
Yeah, mine is going to be another Formula One related one, which it seems like it's kind of a weekly basis here. And so the Formula One race at the French Grand Prix was a disaster. I did not watch it because I said I wasn't going to watch any other races this season based on what I saw in Montreal. But, you know, I still have a Twitter account and still see updates and things like that. And everybody was complaining about how poor it was. And Romain Grosjean said it was easy to drive and things like that. And it just doesn't seem like anybody's having a whole lot of fun other than Lewis Hamilton. And so the biggest thing that happened was Daniel Ricciardo on the last lap picked up two penalties, both 5-second penalties for either leaving the track or using track limits to gain an advantage. And so my pitfall is the penalties. The biggest thing for me is that you can't have this much runoff at every track and expect drivers to stay within the lines and not try to push the boundaries once in a while. And the heightening of this kind of started with Max Verstappen's ridiculous penalty at the Circuit of Americas a couple years ago. And kind of like what we discussed at the Circuit of the Americas preview, is that corner cutting is should be illegal and frowned upon, but using track limits to try and, you know, if a driver's blocking you really bad and you have to go out there to make the pass, just let them do it. And that's what Ricardo was kind of saying on Twitter or Instagram after the race. You know, Formula One posted a video of his penalties, and he himself commented on there. I don't have it in front of me. It was something along the lines of someone had to make it entertaining. And he later went on to tweet that he needs to like catch his breath and just move on, because he's going to say something he shouldn't. And just to kind of see the drivers there don't look like they're having all that fun. NASCAR drivers this year don't look like they're having all that fun. They seem pretty miserable after every race and every press conference. They get tired of being asked about the package and why the races aren't fun. And they're, I don't know, qualifying isn't fun. They just seem to be miserable too. So I don't know what's going on in the world of racing this year, but some more smiles and some better racing would be appreciated by fans around the world.
Yeah, like you, I didn't watch it. I didn't watch the penalty replay, but I did see his comments, so hats off for him for kind of the backhanded sarcasm there. And well, somebody had to make it interesting. I'll jump up here. David Ragan in the NASCAR world will be running a throwback scheme or throwback livery. I'm sorry, I'm reading the NASCAR Hall of Fame tweet. Honoring NASCAR Hall of Famer David Pearson's 1969 Ford Torino. That's not the pitfall. The pitfall is the livery itself, which I don't know if you guys have seen it, but looks absolutely nothing like the car from 1969. Colors, patterns, not even close to the same shade of color or pattern or anything. You know, Graham Rahal, Rahal Letterman Lanigan, and his sponsor this weekend knocked it out of the park in terms of, you know, having a current sponsor but using a throwback scheme. And David Ragan went the complete opposite direction and just completely struck out on this one. I know it wasn't David Ragan. Whoever designed this one, you know what they get is a...
He's getting a big fat F.
Glad I can throw that one in there one more time. And thank you to our lovely editor for helping me make a clip out of that. And with that, I don't think there's much else to say on that one other than, you know, bad job on the designer. And I'll turn it over to Jess.
So mine is going to also be NASCAR related. Shocker. so was it last week? I think it was might have been over the weekend. I can't remember exactly when it was. But someone at the NASCAR social media team thought it would be a brilliant idea to take a photo from the Justin Wilson Memorial Tribute Drive over the Golden Gate Bridge and take all of the Indy cars off and put all of the NASCARs in their place. I don't even think I have words to say how awful that is. And I'm hoping and keeping my fingers crossed that the person who thought this would be a great idea didn't realize what the picture was about and just thought, oh, that's kind of cool. I wish we could have done something like that. I'm going to Photoshop it. I really hope they didn't actually know what that photo was for or why IndyCar did that. I hope that it was just kind of one of those dumb blonde moments, for lack of a better way of putting it. I hope it was just a giant mistake, but I cannot believe that they would post something in such poor taste. It was just awful is what it was.
I think that was on Friday because I remember it happening when I was at Road America.
I knew it was, I thought it was the weekend time frame, but I just couldn't remember exactly.
Nonetheless, yeah, not good.
Yeah, hopefully it was just an honest mistake, but yeah, just a bad look all around.
Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, comes time to end the episode shortly here. Thanks everybody again for listening. We should have more t-shirts for sale soon. We have tons of stickers for sale now. If you'd like a Pit Lane Parlay sticker, a bunch went out in the mail today. And we will be back next week with another episode. So, Jess, why don't you go ahead and sign us off?
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.